This is real news. Where is it? I'm Peter Laufer, co-director of the University of Oregon UNESCO Crossings Institute. Gives me great pleasure to welcome to Real News my colleague from across campus here at the University of Oregon, David Hollenberg, professor of Arabic and Islamic studies with a specialty in Yemen. And David, the reason why it seems to make sense to ask you some questions about how to help consumers, all of us are news consumers, differentiate between what we might consider fact and fiction is because of your specialty and what's going on in Yemen. And Yemen is so important for those of us who have been there or have some interest in what's going on there. There's such a tragedy unfolding there. And yet, not only do we have the question of fact versus fiction, but we have the question of where is it in the news? So how does that fit into the role of the news consumer to have a sense, a good sense of what's going on in the world?
I mean, first I do want to precede what I'm going to say by saying I'm a very good friend to Yemenis, to Yemen projects. I'm not really a specialist in Yemen. I got drawn into Yemen because I had a manuscript project that took me there. And I just loved the country and got very close, started working very closely with the nonprofit there. My actual research is on other topics. I just wanted to be clear. So
yes, assert that by default, you are a Yemen expert, both because of the work you're doing there and your appreciation for the culture and the place. And also just by default, those of us who even have a passing interest are quasi-experts because Yemen is so off the beaten path.
I gotcha, yeah. Well, and just to start to answer your question, you know, and it's one that I've actually discussed with some of my Yemeni colleagues over the years, is why is it Yemen is one of several countries, including in the region, has suffered great humanitarian disasters and conflict. And yet, for some reason, whereas Syria did capture a lot of interest in viewers and media, Yemen really hasn't. And we've talked about it, and it is very hard for me to understand. I mean, and it does make me wonder about if there are factors that I don't really know that are coming to bear on the choices that are being made in the media. This is not my field, but I will give you one little example that I just heard about from a colleague that, for example, when there is a story being written, for example, by the BBC on Yemen, apparently the producers or someone at a fairly high level, the first thing they do is reach out to their sort of the governing entity, the Gulf Cooperation Council representatives, and get a counter narrative and their media wing. And so whatever sort of perspective might be taken from outside of that is going to always be kind of countered. And there's basically a lot of resources going into that side of things. But that doesn't really answer the question because that's already premised on there being a story, which there often just isn't. It's just absent, isn't it?
Yes, and that is the issue, that it's absent. And one could make the argument that we can't cover, and as consumers, we can't take in everything that's going on in the world. But Yemen is important, not just for the Yemenis, but I will argue for Americans, because we have been so involved in the war that's created that which the United Nations is calling, or at least has until what's happening in Afghanistan, the worst humanitarian crisis in the world. If you have the worst humanitarian crisis in the world and you have U.S. involvement, one would think there would be a tension.
I agreed. I did... In preparation for this interview, I did some Googling just to see how Yemen is covered to the extent that it's covered. And first of all, you're quite right. It's just not. There isn't a ton of coverage. And then when you go back, I mean, sort of the categories are humanitarian disaster, like the worst humanitarian disaster in the world. That's one. the slightly older ones having to do with it being a terrorist, you know, an al-Qaeda terrorist breeding ground. So that, you know, and we of course did have drone Yemen in the Obama years quite a bit. So there was that kind of angle. And yeah, but you're right. There's you know, there's very little coverage. What little coverage there is, the narrative seems to be, other than what I already mentioned, that, you know, this is Yemen is sort of victim of a proxy war between the what those are referred to as the Iranian-backed Houthis versus the Saudi-backed internationally recognized government. And that beyond that, the narrative is that the situation is exceedingly complex and hard to understand. And actually, that was the one thing I wanted to sort of get out there, because that this is my second interview I've done. The first was at a local NPR affiliate, but I ended up, I felt botching that question when I was asked about the complexity. So on one level, and of course, it is very complex, but on another level, I can make it quite simple. Some of the most richest and most powerful armies in the region have pummeled with aerial strikes one of the poorest countries and initiated a blockade that's basically been starving them of food, water, and fuel, and brought them into a situation of extreme deprivation, half the country's food insecure, cholera, misery. And so this is very much with the US, France, UK support, logistical support. So this is, to make it simple, this is what's going on.
This is what's going on with tax dollars from you and me supporting that US backed on the Saudi side, airstrikes and other military efforts. And so is there a reason that those of us who care about the place should be trying to push it onto, if not the front pages, at least into the news? Or is the reality of the news cycle, from your point of view as not being a journalist, such that is an effort that is not likely to result in more attention?
I hope it'll result in more attention. I mean, I don't claim to have any insight. I mean, I have my hope is, and you know, the project I've discussed with you is if journalists who are interested in Yemen are given good sources on the ground who can sort of see and hear things and report to them, and they can collaborate with either, you know, with firsthand sources and local journalists in Yemen, you know, people do care that there's a human, you know, that there is a conscience, and people, when they see and the story becomes real, it becomes personal, they see someone, they talk to someone, that there will be pressure brought to bear on the various parties to end this.
One of the things that's so difficult, aside from the obvious tragedy of humanitarian crisis, is to think about unique aspects of Yemeni culture being jeopardized and destroyed by these bombardments. The architecture, which perhaps you can describe for those listening better than I, that is not replicable and is unique to the region.
Absolutely. Oh, it's absolutely tragic what's already been lost. Saada is the home of, for 13 centuries of Zaidi Shi'i learning, and had, in addition to the sort of losses of sources of manuscripts, but the Al-Hadi Mosque, which is, I think, 10th century, beautiful mosque, was just, you know, leveled. I mean, parts of that region are, if you look at pictures, it's like Dresden after the war. I mean, it's just totally flattened. I mean, they're just effaced from the earth, the whole, you know, towns. Sana'a is occasionally, the capital is occasionally, which is beautiful, exquisite, is occasionally bombed, but has not suffered that kind of bombardment. But there's enough aerial bombardment that it's, the children are traumatized. And so I've talked to my friends who've got young children, and the whole family is traumatized, you know, and you can't sleep through the night because you're afraid, and you hear these planes and you don't know how close the bombing is going to be. I mean, this goes on for years. It's, of course, it's a whole generation is being scarred, and it's very difficult to watch. And in terms of the heritage, it is an old and distinctive, and I find quite exciting and stimulating intellectual heritage, which is still stands. I mean, the people are still, you know, they're still, the scholarly, traditional scholarly community is still present. The books are still present. But what's changed is now, of course, it's become politicized in a different way, such that, I mean, I can sort of feel the tenor of the conversations changing, such that I don't know what's going to be like when all this is over. I mean, in other words, what used to be kind of a continuous tradition has now been disrupted by it being kind of that traditional scope of learning is now closely allied with a ideology for, which is kind of has a certain status in the international world. And, you know, so I think things will be different after the war, even with that. So it's a disruption of continuity, which I find quite sad. I mean, was sort of set up to do ethnographic work on that community when the war started. You know, basically I talked to them, I said, even if it was quite unlikely I was going to get access, but they said, there's no more studying going on. Everybody who's, you know, under 60 or under 70 is manning a post. You know, there's no more, we're not reading the books anymore. So that's what was happening 5-6 years ago.
And continues to today. Yeah. And yeah, it continues without attention, but it's a reminder that those who want the story and work to find it probably can at least scratch the surface. And why don't we end this on a positive note? Because one of the strong memories I have, aside from the beauty of the place, is the extraordinary warmth of the people and the welcoming nature of the people. So maybe speak to that for a moment and we'll say goodbye.
Sure. Yeah. I was, you know, my very first trip to Yemen was before I got involved in this in 1996. I was still a grad student. And I was interested at that time in oral literature. The literature that's not written down, that's sort of like epic poetry and such. And I was just traveling around. It was kind of a pre-dissertation grant. And they ended up being hosted by this family in near Mount Sabr, near Taiz. And so I ended up getting sick. I had sort of pre-strep throat. It was kind of pretty miserable. And I had to leave early. And the father of the household was so disappointed because he was looking forward to hosting me for the Friday, you know, for Juma, for a big dinner. And there's a kind of generosity that kind of comes from some deep from the heart that comes so naturally to, so, you know, to Yemenis that you don't really understand. It's a stereotype, the sort of generosity of the Arab. But when you, something about Yemen, you really feel it quite deeply. I mean, I'll never forget his face of that look of, oh no, you're not going to be here. I was so looking for it. So yeah, no, it's a lovely, very gentle, very beautiful culture. And I say beautiful, I mean, sort of like the French, they take quite care at how they look and the clothes and the architecture and everything. Everything has to be just so. So it's a lovely culture.
It is indeed. Professor David Hollenberg, Arabic and Islamic Studies at the University of Oregon. Thank you, colleague, for joining us today here on Real News.
Thank you so much, Peter.
You've been listening to Real News. Where is it? I'm Peter Laufer, co-director of the University of Oregon UNESCO Crossings Institute. Join us again for more on Real News.